You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
See some movement at the takeoff zone. It's Kelly Slater grabbing rail. A clean entry. This thing holding open. It spits.
When it spit me, I thought it was going to spit me off my board.
Comes out with the spit. Spits him out.
Comes out after the spit.
Gets spat out of another good-looking wave here.
Spit.
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 We're just spitballing, right? Yeah, I got Welcome, everybody, to Spit, the surfing podcast where we spitball and we roll with just great surfing content for your ears. David Lee Scales across from me, freshly back from Europe. I'm Scott Bass. Good morning. Welcome. It's Thursday, October 10th.
Excellent introduction, Scott. I love it.
Okay.
Thorough. Explained everything. Caught everybody up with what's been going on.
Yeah, we haven't had a show in like 3 weeks, I don't think.
That's my fault. I was out of town. Sorry about that. You know, a lot of podcasts do things in seasons.
Whatever.
Have you ever considered it, though? Like, rather than trying to stick to an every other week schedule throughout the year, take a month or two off?
I do know this. We have a lot of listeners that really enjoy our show. And they... appreciate an every 2 week guarantee. We sincerely do. I run into people all the time.
I was just going to ask, have you received feedback recently? I seem to be getting it more and more.
I just received feedback yesterday from a guy named Jeff from the Morro Bay area.
Like Central in the Coast. Water or just?
No, I met him for coffee. I was giving him some stuff for his high school surf team donation thing.
Morro Bay. Yeah. He's totally emailed me a bunch.
Yeah. Super cool guy.
Super nice.
And anyway, he was saying, you know, how much he enjoys the show, and it was cool.
It only took 7 years for us to hit our stride.
Has it been 7 years? At least, huh?
Not quite. Okay. It was 2013. I think it was like... late summer 2013. So it's been 6.5 years. It's wild, right?
So if I started in 2005, that's 8 years. I was doing it 8 years prior to 2013. And then you and I, so it's been about equal amounts with you as with a bunch of other people.
So that, you're going on 15 years?
Of talking
that's
on the radio.
That's insane.
About, I know. It's silly.
That's so insane.
You'd think I'd figure out how to do it by now, but
how's
no.
it feel?
you know what? We got some feedback about the last episode. I talked about the legislation that Governor Newsom may sign here. I think it's this coming up next week, the 13th, right? In 3 days. That would be Monday. Regarding opening up the Hollister Ranch to public beach access from the land. And of course, that's sort of a hot button topic, and we got some feedback, or I did. I don't know if you got any, but interestingly, most of the feedback was from people paddling up to me and talking to me about it in the water. At least three or four different people basically said that they kind of agree with me that we should just leave the ranch the way it is. You know, like just, yeah, okay, it is what it is, but if you open it up to the public, it's going to get ruined, was basically the vibe I got from most people. That's where their stance was. Even if they were like, yeah, I know it should be open to the public, I get it. Like so many, much like you and I, we we're really pro open beach access for the public because it's our land. You know, like we have, we're allowed to have access to the ocean. But we're also conflicted because we're like, it would be kind of lame if it turned into like, you know, just got ruined with a bunch of people showing up. Mm-hmm. Even if it was me that was showing up, it right. would be bad. But so anyway, that's most of the feedback I've received. I did receive one bit of feedback where somebody was disappointed that I called all the ranch owners basically assholes, rich assholes, which I did. But as I listened back on it, I kind of said, wait, not all of them, not all of them.
Yeah.
So I did kind of throw a caveat in there at the end, but apparently somebody took a little snippet out of the show and sent that to somebody else.
No way.
Kind of made its way around.
People are the worst.
Yeah.
That is the worst.
So the guy was more mad that I was calling landowners, and this guy was a landowner.
Yeah, but that guy's a tattletale. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, you can't take that, you can't take snippets of the conversation out of context. Like,
right.
Or it's just not sincere to do that. You know? That's lame.
Yeah.
Did you have an email you were going to read? Because I've got a couple about that exact thing. So
no, I did not.
This email says the September 17th podcast, including the ranch, was riveting. Excellent perspectives from you both. You captured the feelings, dreams I've had about the enigma of the ranch. To add to your conversation, here's something I felt was missing. Freedom isn't free. The fact that the ranch owners can buy property and have access isn't because they have money. It's because of the sacrifice of soldiers and politicians who created and protected American freedom. It's because the sacrifice they made to stop Hitler and the Germans. It's because of the Spanish-American War, Revolutionary War, etc. And I think about those sacrifices these families made, and I think about the sons and daughters growing up without fathers, and I think about their descendants, how they grew up at a disadvantage. If anybody should have access to the ranch, first and foremost, it should be them. Same for Native Americans. Another point, the law of diminishing returns. Often, surfers are chasing something they can never catch. Quote, the law of diminishing returns states that in all productive processes, adding one or more factor of production will hold all others constant. Will at some point yield lower incremental per unit returns. End quote. The ice cream analogy is often used. The first bites are delicious, and by the end, you're sick of it. And you can tell Scott that when he rails on you for leaving Baja and pumping surf, he'd likely be more a more interesting person had he put down the surfboard and picked up a book a few more times.
Wow.
As always, Ross from New York, trying to add an anti-Spicoli perspective.
All right, Ross.
Zinged you at the end there for no reason.
It's sad because Ross doesn't know how much I read.
Although you do talk about it on the show. I know. Think he would know.
Exactly.
What are your thoughts on that? I mean,
by the way, I'm reading Andrew Yang's book right now. Yang Gang, hashtag Yang Gang. Just so Ross knows, I'm a reader.
Dude.
I'm literate.
How do you feel about, not to make this political.
Yeah, we shouldn't.
But Ross just did.
Oh, yeah.
By bringing in.
We're going to blame you, Ross.
Yeah, bringing in World War II references to.
I actually agree with Ross. I mean, I agree with what he says that, hey, man, you know, like all these people died so that we can have access to our land.
So that, yeah, and that we can quibble about surfing a spot.
Surfers are the worst. At the end of the day, what it really does boil down to, and I hate to rehash what we already went over last time, but it just comes down to we're self-centered. Like when I was talking to somebody the other day and they were saying, yeah, but it's so lame that they get to surf it and we don't, you know, like, and there's this, it's just like, I just asked the guy, excavate really what you're talking about here. What you really want to do, what's really doing this is you're bummed that they have something that you don't have. Just let it go.
Yeah.
Like, it's no big deal.
That argument will only drive you crazy. His argument will only drive him crazy is what I mean.
Yeah.
Like, does he even have an opportunity to surf it? Would he make the drive? Would he put in the effort if given the chance? Probably not. But it's more fun just to argue.
Well, this guy has surfed there before.
Oh, has he?
But, you know, anyway.
So what are your, I think the most interesting, I don't know, applicable lesson out of that email is the law of diminishing returns thing.
It was a little confusing for me. I need it to be, because the ice cream metaphor didn't seem to jive up with,
I think,
law of diminishing returns.
Well, the way I interpreted it was the harder you chase something and the more you kind of try to grasp it, the more it slips through your fingers. And so go out to your local beach, catch a wave, be grateful for that wave. Once you start sitting out the back, battling for set waves, trying to get more than the other guy, the joy is the diminishing return. You know, even if you're actually getting more waves and more set waves, you've kind of lost the joy of the guy who's just sitting on the inside getting scraps, you know?
Yeah.
And yeah, not stressing about it. I think
it's
that's
just that the law that you read seemed real, like a hardened law, like out of some sort of manifesto about means of production.
Yeah.
And then then we took it and went real philosophical with it.
Yeah.
You know? And it,
yeah, so. Fair enough. Well, I think the analogy, or as it applies to the ranch, is just like putting that much gravitas on this one surf spot and making it your paragon that you're chasing. It almost can never live up to the hype, you know? And
yeah, I agree. It's better to just have this sort of vision that you and I have about it, and that a lot of us have about it. And I've never, ever been there. But I just have this vision of this, you know, like Skip Fry paddling out of Coho or whatever, just this like really cool thing. And I'm good with that. And I'm not going to go chase that, mm-hmm. you know? And I don't know. It's funny. I was actually talking to a guy this morning in the water about this. And he also is like, you know what? If you're suitably inspired, which is what yep. Sam George's thing, if you're suitably inspired, you can go surf the ranch. He was telling me how many times he walked in there. He used to live up there. You can walk in. And at full tide, you have to paddle around a couple of points. But it's about a mile to super killer, you know, whichever wave it was. I think it was Drake's.
Yeah.
But, and I also, in our conversation this morning, me and this guy, we came to the realization that what it's, if it opens up to the public and there's this managed access and people are allowed to go surf there, but it's going to be a major vibe. Like if you're one of the guys that just shows up and goes, "Hi guys, I'm new here." And you paddle out, like, there's going to be a major vibe already, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that in 10 years, this whole thing about the ranch opening up to the public is going to be, nobody's going to even go there. Like, yeah. People are going to be over it, you know?
It's, yeah.
There might be one or two little, like, Lunada Bay confrontations. But just as Lunada Bay is, like, people kind of just forget about it. And I bet it gets forgotten about.
Yeah. Well, here's another email that I think was sent to both you and I. It says, "Thanks for some historical context and news updates on the ranch. I've never surfed there and have no ties. Ironically, you guys are extolling the virtues of Zion and Yosemite, but cannot connect the dots that the ranch could be protected and enjoyed by California taxpayers who help fund it and might pay extra to keep it at a national park protection level. You made the point you were just arguing against. This is reinforced if the surf atmosphere in the current entitled closed state in their drug cartel-like behavior. What is there to protect surf-wise? Keep it pristine, but open it up like Cardiff campgrounds for California taxpayers. Fight to keep the coastline open access, and you'll lose in a society of huge inequality." End quote.
I didn't understand the last part.
Fight to keep the coastline open access, or you'll lose in a huge society of huge inequality. In a society of huge inequality.
Oh, yeah. I agree. I think if you're one that is siding with the homeowners and don't want it open to the public, you're on the wrong side of history. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah.
And I'm okay with it either way. I'm okay with it being open to the public. I'm never going to go there. I don't care one way or the other, except I care that I think that our constitutional rights should be upheld by those, and at, you know, the giving of blood by all these soldiers that you mentioned earlier. I think people should have the right to go there.
Yeah.
It's silly not to.
Yeah.
But I also have that 30,000 foot level where it's like, it'd be cool if it was just pristine and killer and unreal. And I think some people are saying, you know what, it can be both. And maybe it can. I think the people that are really entrenched, the homeowners up there, are just like, oh my God, it's over. It's Armageddon, you know, like at the end of times.
Yeah.
Sell, sell, sell.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's the case. Because I understand it to be managed access. Like, it's going to be implemented very slow.
For sure.
They don't even know how they're going to implement it, but they are probably going to have to build some sort of road to some spot and then do, like, I don't know, 100 people in a lottery per weekend or something. Or who knows? Like, they don't know. Yeah. But they are asking for all stakeholders to have input in it. Like they're saying, homeowners, tell us the best usage of this. You know, you seem to have been doing a pretty good job of it. Understanding that we are going to allow public access, how would you like that to go down?
Yeah.
And if the homeowners are smart, they'll be like, okay, we lost. We better just get on, you know, be on their good side and see as get as much as we can out of this as far as our point of view.
Mm-hmm.
Or they could go the other way and just be like, nah, you know, start throwing rocks, and then it's going to be really bad for them because they won't have any say in it. They'll lose their say in it.
Yeah. Complicated. I'm glad that I don't work in legislation. Like, even trying to solve the problem, this is so not my skill set. It feels so forced to me, you know?
Compromise?
Yeah.
You're not good with compromise.
I want nothing to do with compromise.
No wonder you're not married. Oh, my.
Classic.
Hey, the Surf Aid Cup is taking place October 19th. As you know, I'm on the board of directors of Surf Aid International. And we are producing our Surf Aid Cup in San Diego at Cardiff Reef with the Suomi Surfing Association Club Contest. So you can surf with a pro, Taylor Knox, Damian Hopgood, Devin Howard, Jen Smith. Sign up at surfaid.org to get involved, just get a team involved and to have fun and surf with a pro and raise money for a great cause. Down in Baja, we're doing stuff. And, of course, in Indonesia. And it looks like maybe the Solomon Islands as well.
Amazing.
Yeah.
What constitutes a pro?
Who are you suggesting isn't a pro, Devin?
Every single one of us.
Well, Taylor Knox is a pro. I mean,
was or is?
Yes,
exactly.
Damien Hobgood, love that guy.
No question. Tons of love.
Yeah, we love all of them. But
I feel like you guys are using that term loosely.
Taylor Knox is a pro surfer. I don't think that's. I don't is. Yeah, I mean, he's getting like. To be a pro surfer, you have to make X amount of money, just get a check sent to you for being who you are. And that amount is enough to cover your mortgage, cover all your bills, plus 30%. That makes you a pro surfer, in my opinion.
Okay.
That's a pretty good equation off the top of my head.
Yeah, that's fair.
Let's say your net is $5,000, then 30% is another $1,500. If you make $6,500... A month from a surf company, like for Taylor, it'd probably be Reef or.
That was going to be my further.
Because then I think if you can live off of the check, then you're a pro surfer.
Okay.
If you don't have
started this by saying to make that money off of surfing, but now, and I don't think that is the definition of a pro surfer. But you're saying from a sponsor who's paying you to surf, that's where the money.
Well, I'm just saying you're a pro surfer if you're getting paid to go surfing,
yes.
Which is, okay. And I don't care if it's in competition or it's on Instagram. Like, you're professional if you're getting paid, you're cashing a check, and you're that's how you make your living.
Check is coming from a company that's paying you to surf.
Yeah,
yes,
to be you.
That is
to be you. Like if
yes.
You know, they're not going to pay you to just like sit in your van. You actually got to suit up and go surf.
Right. That is the definition of a pro surfer. I agree with that. And you think all of those guys fit that criteria?
No, I think the criteria is it's X amount of dollars to cover your nut. So it's different for everyone. Like, some people might live in their van and they only have $1,000 nut a month. So it's your monthly nut plus 30%.
Okay.
Because you're going to need money to, like, you know.
I'm in. So you think those people all fit that?
I don't know. Let's look. Taylor Knox, does he probably owns a home in Carlsbad. His wife, I don't even know. I have no idea to speculate.
First of all, I'm a huge fan of all these people.
Me too. I love these guys.
Completely. But I just want to be...
I think Taylor might have some... He's doing like some workout stuff.
So that's my point. Is like, these people have been wise to diversify, knowing like that paycheck ends from Reef at a certain point. And so they've diversified and they're making money off of surfing, but it's not because they are surfing in the water every day and getting enough exposure.
Well, like, if you go to Taylor Knox's gym, I think he has a gym. Doesn't he have some sort of gym?
I don't know.
Okay. Well, I hate to start riffing on something that may not even be.
It's way better if we just speculate.
Okay. Let's speculate that he has whatever business. I'm going to the business because he's Taylor Knox the surfer, not because he's known for his great workouts.
No,
although Taylor actually is in great shape for a 40-something-year-old guy. He's like, because I see on his Instagram, he does all these workouts and he promotes working out and he promotes these different stretches. And then at the end, I think it's like, come to like the gym that I have. So like, I think there's some workout health thing going on. But my point is, I'm only going there because Taylor has the meanest cutback in the world and I want to go hang out with Taylor Knox, the surfer. Like, You know what I mean? Like if it was Joe Smith or somebody that I didn't, you know, like I'd be like, I'm just going to go to LA Fitness. Why do I need to go to Joe Smith's workout thing?
For sure.
So this is where it gets a gray area. Like, is that still being a pro surfer? The fact that he's using his image as a surfer to market in clientele like myself.
He's banking off his history as a pro surfer.
So is he a pro surfer?
No.
The revenue he's creating is coming from, in part, not in full, but in part from marketing of himself as a professional surfer.
Ex-pro surfer.
Right, whatever. But as an ex-pro surfer, but the revenues are covering his monthly nut.
He's not getting paid to go surf, though. That's the point. He's getting paid for his workout. You know?
Okay, well.
So Surf Aid, Surf Aid is doing this come surf with an ex-pro surfer event?
No, let's not tear. Surf Aid International is a great thing. We I'm negatively.
Come on. It's all fun and games.
Okay. David hates helping mothers and children.
I'm against philanthropy.
You're full against stop. Helping
full stop.
People in Indonesia, the poverty-stricken families. You're against it.
I know.
You're really still welcome. You're this. Still welcome.
Taylor Knox is going to hate me. Struggling people are going to hate me. This is not going well for David Scales.
No.
I feel like the pro surf term is surf the equivalent pro. To saying porn star. Like you can't just, they're not all stars, right? Somebody does porn once and they're labeled as a porn star. No, they're not all stars. They're just a pornographic
It's actually a pretty good analogy. I mean, we're all pro surfers. Exactly. Like when you think about it. It's like,
yeah.
Why aren't I?
You do one QS event and you're a pro surfer.
Yeah.
You know, like, or whoever from your high school points to that person and goes, oh yeah, that person's a pro surfer. They traveled to Brazil and they did
one. How about this? If you've cashed a check from doing well in a contest where they wrote you a check for the result that you got in an event, are you forever a pro surfer?
In that person's mind, they are. And in the, all of their high school like cohort does view them as a pro surfer because they're an accountant sitting behind a desk wishing that they were that person.
Right.
So yes. But I'm just saying we need to, we don't want to be painted with the same brush as the porn industry has been.
Of course
by everybody being a porn star, therefore right. Nobody's a porn star. There's legitimately 5 porn stars in the world.
Okay.
Jenna Jameson, Ron Jeremy.
Oh
I'm
my
just
God.
Pulling these names off the top of my head.
You're coming in hot.
And like there's only 5. Everybody right. else is just actors and actresses performing a task.
So what are you saying as a pro surfer that people that are on the CT?
No, I agree with what you said. The 30% thing's a good, that is a good way to do it.
Yeah.
But you can
make
cycle
a monthly
out
plus, but it has to be, the money has to be coming in because you don't have any other gig.
It's coming in from the visibility of you riding waves, like right. the exposure that you're getting. But
so the revenue that Taylor might be bringing in is
tangential. That's tangential revenue.
You can't guarantee that all that revenue is from. I agree with you that some people are like, I don't know Taylor Knox, but my buddy told me to come to this gym because it's a killer workout. And so there's revenue there that has nothing to do with
correct.
Him.
Yeah. So I think that you can also cycle in and out like of that equation. So he can be a pro surfer at times and then he's not a pro surfer at times. And I'm willing to dub
like
him a pro surfer again, because if Taylor's Instagram,
if they send him to the Maldives for that surf contest where they have all those ex surfers, and he makes enough that month to get his nut covered plus 30%, that month he is a pro surfer.
Correct. Yes, and I will redact my previous statement at that point.
It's a month by month thing.
I'm reevaluating. I've got a spreadsheet. I'll show it to you later.
This is pretty good. This reminds me of Transworld Surf, where they used to have like exposure-o-meter, you know, and like. Some months, guys weren't getting too much exposure. They weren't necessarily
they
pro surfers that
yeah, month. They need to reevaluate their whole program. You know who cycled back into the pro surfer realm for me this past week? Clay Marzo.
Really?
Yeah. Recent Instagram, he's been posting a couple, like all of my assessment of pro surfing is through Instagram. It's pretty much all, 100%
really?
Of it comes through Instagram. And yeah, he's posted a couple of clips recently. The one that was most impressive was a backside barrel ride where he was like,
I'm going to Instagram to make sure Clay's on my feed. I don't
cool.
think he is.
He's doing like a parallel stance, almost sitting on a board, leaning forward onto his knees. He's just adapting through this backside barrel in this cat like lounging, fully flexible, navigating. It was so insane. But it reminded me, Clay Marzo kind of shied away from the limelight, opted out of pro surfing, I would argue, Quicksilver originally dropped him, but he could have done anything with his career at that point, but he's opted out of the limelight, makes occasional appearances. Every time that he does, he's doing something that is mind-blowingly not only talented, but like different than what anybody else is doing.
Yeah, this layback thing that he does, he did it in Indo. He was in the Indo contest, the rip curl at Padang. Yeah. Did, remember that tube ride he got on at Padang where he was like
leaning back.
Yeah, he's front side, but he was doing the weirdest layback thing ever. And he's doing that here on this Instagram thing that you just mentioned too, where it's just this new way to get deeper in the barrel. And you've got to be super stretchy and just like limber and...
Yeah, no mere mortal could do it.
I've never seen anyone else do that. Maybe Mason does it on some level, but not like this.
Yeah, and that's a good analogy, by the way. Like Mason is a good comparison to Clay in that they're both completely uniquely utilizing their own physicality and body style and body type to surf the wave, the way the wave is supposed to be surfed, but specific to their body type, and then riding the right boards that allow them to do those things.
It's almost like physiological imagination.
Totally. Like I couldn't do what they do, and they couldn't, well, they could do what I do, but you know, like if I was given their level of talent, then I would be doing it a different way because my body is different. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But they're completely actualized in their talent and expression of their creativity in riding a wave. It's super... That's what makes it fascinating to watch. So Clay Marzo, I don't know that he's earning any money off of pro surfing, but
he looks like rock star energy drink.
Okay, that's fair.
He's definitely pimping rock star like front and center in a lot of his stuff.
But he's really underutilized as a talent for reasons that we're all kind of aware of, you know.
It looks like there's a rock star super brand and probably a sunglass company.
Okay,
Carve. That's who he is always tagging.
And he's always been with Superbrand, I feel like, since his childhood.
That's pretty much an advertisement right
there. Dude, the Rockstar ads, by the way, are so blatant. Like, whatever their obligation is to post one a month on Instagram, it's always, like, so obviously an advertisement.
Yeah.
You know, like...
Yeah, that's okay.
Which is fine. I think, actually, sometimes that's better.
Like, yeah, but don't try to fake us out.
Speaking of which,
yeah,
how's your Manscaped products coming?
Oh my god, I have
perfect segue, Scott.
I have not Manscaped yet, but I need to bring my wife into the equation and discuss this whole thing. And
oh, really?
Yeah, I mean, I'm, you know,
this is a household meeting conversation.
No, not a household, just a master bedroom meeting.
Oh, I see.
But she did say, "Don't talk about it."
Well,
she specifically said, tell David not to talk about him manscaping himself. It's kind of gross.
Now, well, little did she know, I'm doing a public service announcement. Okay. This isn't for me.
Right.
This is for the greater good, for everybody.
For public health.
Of course.
Right.
Of course. Somebody sent me a JAMA article on manscaping.
What's JAMA?
JAMA, it's a scientific journal.
Oh, Journal of American Medical Association.
There you go. You don't know what JAMA is? Come on.
I figured it out. I'm good with acronyms.
Well, Manscaped, doesn't even look like you've groomed, period. Forget about
Manscaped. Let's put it this way. When you walk around without shoes, the option of manscaping is probably not going to happen.
Why are you
I'm a fan.
Why are you not wearing shoes?
I just have my sandals in my truck, and I just forgot to slip them on when I jumped out of the truck to like get my wetsuit so it's drying out in the sun. And then I walked in here and we're just... It wasn't like a purposeful thing, but it does feel liberating to not have any sandals on.
It's so funny that of the three adult males in this building right now, I'm the only one who has any footwear on and my toes are still showing. It's not actually closed toed,
no.
But two of the other adult males, this wasn't planned. This wasn't in a memo, walked in here with no shoes on. This is the state of our industry.
But look, the ball wipes, the lawnmower thing. I'm thinking actually about getting rid of some of this.
The chest hair.
Yeah, the chest hair.
Okay. Well, start there. I'd say start north and work your way down.
So I think that's what she wants to do.
She. Okay. So you're going...
I need to get the green light.
Okay. Fair enough. So, full disclosure, support for Spit today comes from Manscaped.
Oh, good.
They're actually number one in men's below-the-belt grooming, Scott. Not number two. They're number one.
It's
precision engineered tools for your family jewels, but they will work on your chest as well.
Cool.
By the way, Halloween is right around the corner.
Should I mask it for Halloween?
You don't want to be mistaken for Chewbacca.
Right.
Or Bigfoot. Right. So Manscaped. Last time we were talking about the lawnmower 2.0. Yeah. Skin safe technology that allows you to protect from nicking your pumpkins.
Scott. Oh my God. Did they send you this copy or did you write this?
I will not reveal. Some That's of it, it's good. Improvised.
That's pretty
it's,
good.
But here's the real deal. The waterproof 2.0 is waterproof. Or I said the lawnmower 2.0 is waterproof.
Yeah.
So you can actually create less mess by trimming in the shower. Most importantly, listeners get 20% off and free shipping by using our promo code SURFING at manscaped.com.
You know what? So somebody, that same guy was talking to you this morning in the water. The first thing he said is, hey, are you Manscaped?
Did he really?
Yeah. He was laughing. So that's pretty good. It's working. So good. We appreciate that.
Good.
Well, they and put, everyone should give the manscaping thing a run for its money.
They do.
Your Manscaped, significant other will appreciate it.
Dude, you'll appreciate it. It makes everything better. All just right. saying that.
That's too much info.
So they package everything into the perfect package 2.0. Who doesn't want the perfect package 2.0? It has the lawnmower, the crop preserver, which is basically a deodorant for the part of your...
Those are the ball wipes
wretched,
I just mentioned.
Yeah, the part of your wretched body that needs deodorant the most that you haven't been deodorizing.
Right.
Anti-chafing, boxer briefs, crop reviver... ball toner spray.
Did you bring your ball toner spray to Europe with you? That seems like a place where you might need a spritz or two.
You really, yes. It's, yeah.
All right.
You do. Anyways, stay sexy this Halloween, Scott. Don't look like Chewbacca. Manscaped.com, promo code SURFING. 20% off and free shipping. Your surfing. Package will thank you. Manscaped.com.
Use it.
How did we even get on that? Who are we making fun of that led to this? Clay Marzo.
Who knows?
Have you been watching the France Quick Pro?
I have. I've been, you know, just the heat analyzer because the time change is a little off. But
you know what my favorite thing to do is?
What?
Wake up the following morning. Don't check any of the updates. Don't check Instagram. Go into the office with a full day of work. Prop up the phone side by side and push play at the very beginning and watch it as if it's happening in real time.
Huh.
Like, don't fast forward anything. Right. Don't check any. Don't even look at the scores.
Do you turn it off, the volume?
No. Leave the volume on as much as I can. Mm. But then, yeah, don't check scores. So I feel like I'm actually watching it in real time.
Oh, okay. That's hard to do. You got to go digitally dark.
Yeah.
Which is hard to do.
It is hard to do. But I'm committed to the cause.
All right.
What are your thoughts on the event thus far?
Gosh, the second day, the waves are kind of pumping. That day where it was big and meaty and like right on the shore, big barrels, and guys are... I was disappointed that Leo beat Kelly at the last minute there. Mainly because it'd be one thing if like if somebody else beat Kelly, like whoever, some Brazilian or something, like Diego Silva. Or, is that a person? Diego Silva? Diego Peterson or whoever.
David Silva. You're thinking there were a bunch of versions of that name. There was a Diego. Was it Dayton Silva for a while? There's a Diego.
My point is that it was.
David Silva is who you're thinking.
David.
Yeah. D-E-I-V-I-D, I think
is what I was bummed that it was like, because with Leo and Kelly, it's like he's the protege, you know, or Kelly's the protege, right? And Kelly's the mentor and he's the protege. Leo's right. And so to me, it feels like, okay, this is even though this has happened before, Leo's beat Kelly before, but this feels like it's like a changing of the guard is I guess what I mean. Cause it's one thing when somebody else beats Kelly, you're like, all right, Kelly's going to get him back. But Kelly's known this kid since he was like 4 years old or probably since he was born. Right? Because I think he's Belly's stepson.
Yeah, he is.
And so when Leo beats him on Leo's home turf, because that's where Leo lives, basically, in France.
I'm sorry. Explain what home turf means again? I'm just kidding.
Is this a Manscaped thing?
I'm just joking.
Anyway, so that's what it felt a little deeper and darker, like the passing of the torch
It was so unceremonial.
That was my own take on it. I'm not saying that's what everyone else
was doing. I fully agree with you, but it was so unceremonious. Like,
no, Leia was jumping up and down. It's like, what?
Well, yeah, but they're trading sixes, and it's wonky shore break, and you can luck into an eight.
Yeah, it wasn't
you know?
A dusting by any means.
No, but that's what's sad about the current version of Kelly to me, is like, I've been saying this for years, right? But we don't want to see him go out with a whimper. And this is what's happening. It's like, I don't know, early round to some 43rd ranked surfer on tour. He happens to be, like you're saying, have a lot of connection with Kelly outside of the contest. But like, this is what's happening to Kelly kind of with regularity, is these far inferior surfers are winning just through happenstance and mediocre conditions. These are things that never happened to Kelly in his 20-year reign of terror, you know, that we all kind of grew up with, but are now happening with regularity, sometimes due to his injuries, sometimes due to his lack of focus. We're not sure which at this point, because he's got a bunch of other things going on. And it's like, no, this isn't what we want to have happen. We want him to pull a Seinfeld and just go out at the top of the ratings on his own terms. But he's past that point now.
Now it's like, if you're a Kelly fan like I am, I just want him to win pipe and go, that's it.
I know.
You know, and like,
but he can't win pipe anymore either.
No, he can't. No, if he's going to win an event, it could be pipe. I mean, Kelly can win
pipe. He's been trying.
Kelly can win pipe.
For years.
Come on, Kelly. Win pipe.
Yeah, by the way, while John's injured.
Yeah. Speaking of Kelly being sort of doing other things, which has been your mantra for a couple, 3 years now, which is why he hasn't focused, according to David. Somebody sent me a thing that said that he's voicing over the Outer Known ads, I think on the WSL website or somewhere. They heard Kelly's literally the voice of Outer Known. Like, he's like, 15% off, blah, blah, blah.
Oh, really?
Yeah, like just doing the ads, the audio ads.
That's funny. I heard him doing, you know, him talking about the jeans that they're selling, where he's getting barreled at Chopes or Cloudbreak or wherever it was in the jeans. And of course, it's his voice saying, like, I wanted to start this company that was going to be more sustainable, blah, blah, blah. So that makes sense. But you're saying he's just doing it on, like, the...
That's what I'm hearing. I haven't heard it. Somebody sent me a thing that goes, yeah, I just heard Kelly's voice talking about Outer Known. So maybe it was what you're saying, maybe. Like, more of, like, a produced thing.
Yeah, which makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
Either way, it's not surprising. Whatever. It's his company. Yeah. I feel the same way about the Leo thing. What I like about... So a couple of thoughts about the event.
It's fun to watch.
It's so fun to watch. That coming super off fun. Of so Chopu being such a thrilling event, then going to Surf Ranch and being the most boring event of the year.
Where's the soundboard? Wah, wah,
yeah, exactly.
Wah.
And then having the juxtaposition once again of like this mixed up beach break, unpredictable, chaotic thing, but it's exciting. It's
super
exciting. It's so much more exciting. I just love that it really creates such a stark contrast to the wave pool.
The amount of waves rolling in, the like mid to low period swell, just there's just waves all the time.
It's so fun. It's the most fun style of waves.
Have you ever been there?
Yeah.
That place is amazing.
It really is.
That stretch of Southwest France for surfing is just incredible. If you're a beach break lover, it's just mental.
It's my favorite style of wave to surf.
Me too.
And it's also, it can net the highest frustration and also the highest kind of exaltation, you know? But that was mirrored in the contest too. Like, it was interesting to see how many pro level surfers couldn't get scores out.
There was a lot of, as you know, there were a lot of heats being won with 11 points.
Oh,
many heats were like 11.1 to 10.3.
No, Gabriel made it through his heat with an 8-point heat total, yeah. I think. You know, like, it was that hard to find the good ones, which is so exciting to watch. But also kind of a shame. Like, we want to see it obviously good. It gets epic. And so hopefully we can finish the event in good conditions. Did you watch the Red Bull Airborne thing?
No. I mean, I saw a couple of clips of Jack Freestone. I saw Ian Crane's, you know, that he won it. I didn't think he won it. I didn't see it all, but what I saw was, in my opinion, was it Matt Miola that did that? I think Matt Miola should have won.
Even though he didn't land?
Even though he didn't land. Yeah. Just like, to me, that should be about the guy that's got the most balls, the craziest. So anyway, explain Matt Miola did this crazy Well, there was like a death dive into like the shore pound on a just mean, meaty.
He did like three or four of them. He went on, first of all, they ran the event in thumping waves, double overhead. I mean, proper overhead, but you could say double overhead. And like close out sections that were treacherous. And so people went huge, like Matt Miola specifically.
But so this is my point. Do you think Ian Crane went huger than Matt Miola?
No.
Matt I don't Miola either. Way huger. Ian Crane was great. And I'm not here to hate on Ian Crane. I'm just saying what I saw was like a sort of reserved, this is how I'm going to win this event approach versus all hell balls out craziness. Guess what everyone was posting? Matt Miola.
Yeah.
No one was posting Ian Crane.
Right.
And so in my mind, because it's this sort of out of the box contest format, he's the winner. Matt Miola is the winner and he should get the win.
I'm going to take the opposite stance. You have to land.
I think landing will make you even more the winner. But
I mean, look, Matt Miola won a popularity contest for sure. That's great. But to win the contest of surfing, you have to land.
I don't know. I'm just saying, in my mind, he captured the spirit of the event.
I agree. I love that they put him out in those conditions, and I love that Miola. So I think what will happen from this point on is you have to just up the ante. Like, you have to go huge. The fact that Matt Miola
No, you don't. Ian Crane doesn't. Like, that's my point.
Yeah.
Is like, you know, what do we want to see? We want to see Matt Miola. Make it or not. That's what we want to see. And so if you're rewarding less than that, then that's what everyone's going to start to move towards. Everyone's going to start to move towards that.
Yeah, you got to land.
Yeah, but you got to go too.
Yeah, and but Ian did. It wasn't like
no. I know. I'm not here to hate on Ian. I agree. I mean, the guy's incredible. But
yeah, So the Red Bull thing, that was the third event of three this year.
Yeah,
they've had kind of mixed reviews. The first one running at D-Baw during the Snapper event, and my complaint there was like the airs in the contest in the WCT event were better than the airs in the Red Bull event, which is a problem. Italo, I believe, won that Red Bull air event and he's from the CT. So it kind of like shames all of these air specialists. If you're a specialist and this is what you do for a living, you've got nothing to lose. And then you get beat by the guy who actually doesn't even do this. Like, that's pretty bad. And then they went to Karamas and ran in not really air conditions. You know, that's a perfect wave. It's not ideal for airs. So it also wasn't that exciting. This was the most successful version of the event.
Yeah.
Like, this was the right venue to do it. They put him out in the right conditions where people went huge and it offered a lot more excitement than those other events. This one didn't feel like a sideshow from the CT event. This felt like kind of the better show almost than the CT event. And guys were getting barreled too. Like, I think it was Finn McGill, like, got a sick right hand barrel, came out and did a huge alley-oop. I liked it a lot. I thought it was a really successful version of what they've been trying to do all year long.
Yeah.
So
cool.
Yeah, I'm a fan.
Well, it's coming up here tomorrow. It looks like they might run.
Good.
Will it be finals day?
No, I think they need two more days because they're running the women's event simultaneously.
Oh, yeah.
I think they're in the quarters for the women's and round 16 for the men's. Round of 16.
I see they're putting the women out at Supertubes in Portugal next week. The 16th, that event starts.
Nice.
And is it the first time ever the women are now have a... Can you recall the women being in that event?
I don't. They always ran it at Cascais instead.
I think they're
like putting... Like, the men would go up to Supertubes and the women would go down to Cascais. Yeah,
they're moving them all together at Supertubes.
Yeah. Good. Yeah. Good. Courtney got a 10 at Hossiger. Did you see her backside barrel?
No.
It was sick. It was sick. I'll send it to you. Just to keep you up on pro surfing.
Also on October 19th.
Official pro surfers, by the way.
Right.
Yes.
What? How do you do? We do need to sort of vernacular to separate the two.
So what is the other term for the ones who aren't pro surfers?
Yeah, you're either a pro surfer. Well, I mean, it's always been your like a...
Free surfer.
A free surf pro, a free pro surfer versus a...
I'm going, we're just calling them amateur surfers if they're not a pro.
Really?
Yeah.
Not... So Rob Machado's an amateur surfer?
No, he's making money off of surfing specifically.
No, that's what I'm saying. Like, how do you determine
ones on the CT? Oh, there's still free surf pros versus, okay, right, like, contest pros.
Right.
But Taylor Knox is an amateur surfer at this point. He's been downgraded, unless it's the Maldives event.
Wow.
Yeah. I love him. Okay. This isn't an insult. I'm just being clear with the terms. I don't know why he's taking all the heat.
I don't either.
I feel bad. We need to pick somebody else.
Of any of the guys that are on this list, he's the one that could come and pound us the most.
And he's the best.
Why did we pick the meanest? Yeah, he is. Not the meanest.
He's the most
qualified
pro surfer on the list, but he's
the one that could squash me probably with his thighs. Walter Monk. Do you know anything about Walter Monk?
He was played by Tony Shalhoub on that show on USA.
What?
The Monk?
I don't know.
No?
Saturday, October 19th at Scripps Pier is the Walter Monk paddle out. Let me tell you a little bit about Walter Monk. I'll try to keep this brief.
No,
I didn't write this.
All right, what does Matt Warshaw have to tell us
about
Walter Monk?
No, this did not come from Matt Warshaw. Walter H. Monk, one of the foremost oceanographers of the 20th century, who sent pulses of sound through the vast oceans, probably startling a few whales, to measure changes in water temperatures, forecast waves, and seek signs of global warming, died in February of this year. He died of pneumonia. He was 101 years old. Dr. Monk, a scientist explorer who would expound on his discoveries with exuberance, was sometimes called the Einstein of the oceans for his pioneering work in the study of waves, ocean circulation, tides, and irregularities in the Earth's rotation. He was also a geophysicist. In the 1960s, he had a study where he discovered that the waves washing ashore in measured ranks in Southern California had originated thousands of miles away in storms sweeping across the Southern Indian Ocean. The first south swells, David. This discovery led to the improvement of forecasting of big waves coveted by surfers in California, those south swells that I mentioned. As a young scientist during World War II, Dr. Monk had the most important surf forecast in the history of the world.
That's right.
He and Harold Severdrup, the director of Scripps at the time, developed a method for predicting the size of the surf on beaches during amphibious landings so that landing craft could avoid being swamped by waves. The method was first used in the American landings in North Africa in 1942. Go get Rommel. It later predicted correctly that the waves would be high but manageable during the D-Day landings by the Allies in Normandy on June 6, 1944. That is the most important surf forecast so far in our history. The technique, also used in amphibious landings in the Pacific, was credited with saving the lives of thousands of soldiers and Marines. In his research on sound in the ocean starting in the 1970s, Dr. Monk and his colleagues transmitted low-frequency sounds, which at certain depth can travel thousands of miles without weakening significantly. Because sound moves faster in warm water than in cold, the technique can measure differences in average temperature over a long distance. Dr. Monk and his colleagues demonstrated its feasibility by transmitting a pulse of sound from a loudspeaker lowered into the water near the Heard Island in the Indian Ocean. Let's see here. I'll just skip ahead. He volunteered for the Army in 1939. After 18 months in the ranks, he was excused from military service to do research on anti-submarine warfare in the Navy. After the war, Dr. Monk participated in the studies of the atomic tests in the Pacific. Did you know that he was the closest guy? He was literally in like a inflatable craft, the closest guy to the first nuclear bomb tests in the Bikini Atolls.
That's insane.
He just sat there with his binoculars on and like watched it.
That's so nice.
And everyone else is like miles away from him.
Yeah. I mean, aside from like the physical immediacy, you'd be worried about radiation and all sorts of other stuff.
He witnessed it from a raft 10 miles from ground zero. Okay. Because of concerns of that atomic blast might cause a tsunami, he developed a tsunami warning system. Dr. Monk also engaged in research on climate change, blah, blah, blah. Self-effacing, he never took to the sobriquet Einstein of the oceans. Einstein was a great man, he once said to the San Diego Union Tribune. I was never on that level. So there you go. Dr. Walter Monk, his paddle out at the Scripps Pier, October 19th, Saturday.
I might have missed it at the beginning. Did he surf as well?
No.
Oh.
not a surfer, but a friend of surfers, a friend of surf forecasters
yeah,
around the world.
Amazing.
All the guys at Surfline, Sean Collins, Kevin Wallace, Chris Borg, my friend Mark Sponsor at Storm Surf, any surf forecaster that knows anything about it looks to this guy as this was our guy.
Wow.
Dr. Walter Monk. So I anticipate seeing some of those guys at the Paddle Out October 19th.
Wow. That's fascinating.
Yeah.
Good bit of history there.
Thank you.
He should be your Duke.
He is my Duke. Sure. I also have some more history.
Yes.
Are you ready or do you have something here? No, I've spoken for quite a while. Do you want to give me a break here?
Nope.
You have a joke? You don't have a joke?
They come up organically. I'm a joke factory, Scott.
I've got kind of a joke that I probably shouldn't tell on the air, so I won't.
I think you should, and then we can elect to edit it out if we decide.
Okay. So there's these old folks at an old folks home, and they're sitting at the dinner table. They're having dinner,
okay.
All these old folks. And there's this one kind of like batshit crazy old lady that's up at the top of the stairs walking down to the dining room. And all she has on is a robe. And she walks, makes her way down, and slowly people start to kind of look up at her and go, oh, God, here she comes. And she gets to the second step, almost onto the dining room floor, and she whips open her robe, and she's buck naked. And she screams out, super pussy. And this old man looks up and goes, I'll have the soup.
Wow.
That's my joke.
Amazing. Amazing. I, first of all, didn't see it becoming that crass. And number two, didn't see the punchline coming at all. The punchline hit me out of left field. So that was a good joke. That's exactly what you want the joke to do.
Okay, good.
Wow.
Maybe we leave it in.
I'm fine leaving it in. I don't think that's too offensive. No. We'll give a warning at the beginning. I'll come on in post, give a warning, be like, hey, if any kids are listening.
Well, you know what's funny? Like, me and my buddies, we've all told this joke a bunch of times. So whenever we see each other, we just go, I'll have the soup. You just look at it. It just makes you laugh right away. Like, if you see me next week, just go, I'll have the soup. I'll get a chuckle.
That's funny. Yeah. Wow.
Lightning strikes 25 vintage Lightning Bolt surfboards from the 1970s. A majority of these, David, have been beat to hell, disgusting condition underneath houses on the North Shore. And therefore, many of them are 100% glass off restorations to 100% original condition, and many with letters of authenticity from the shapers, including Jerry Lopez, Tom Parrish, Rory Russell, Bill Stonebreaker, Bill Barnfield, Mickey Munoz, Billy Hamilton, Brian Hamilton, Kip Akamoto, Randy Rarick, Dennis Pang, Dick Brewer, Barry Kanayapuni, Reno Abalera, Tom Eberle, Sam Hawk, Don Copeland, Rick Irons, Ed Angulo, Pat Ross, and Tom Nellis, and many others. These vintage boards are being auctioned off on the CaliforniaGoldSurfAuction.com. The preview of these boards is October 16th, and the lots begin to close 1 month later, November 16th, CaliforniaGoldSurfAuction.com.
What does glass off restoration mean?
It means if you pull a board, like let's say you have a board that's just beat to shit. Like it's really like it needs to go to the landfill. It's just destroyed. It's just ugly, right? It's not something you're proud of. A glass off restoration is when they pop the glass off of the board, then take a razor blade and cut it down the seam and just peel off the glass. Take that old glass, throw it away. Take the board, re-glass it. But they do it to its exact original condition.
So you can peel the lamination off a board without damaging
the board. You want to do is you don't want to peel it. You want to pop it. There's a difference. If you peel it, you're going to damage the integrity of the shape.
How do you pop it?
There's a couple of different ways, but one way that they do it is they'll put little holes along the stringer, like say every 8 inches, and maybe along the rails too. And then they'll get an air pressure gun, you know, compressed air gun, and just go and pop air, super compressed air right into that one of those holes. And the whole thing just goes.
Just in one.
Yeah.
Fail swoop.
Sometimes you have to do more than one hole, but. From what I understand, you just do one hole and it pops off. From there, it's kind of loose and it's not a tear off. It's a pop off. And so it maintains.
I've never seen that before.
Well, it's sort of a trick of the trade. I'm not sure. That was sort of proprietary info.
So then they laminate, like they go to the brand Lightning Bolt or whatever and get the actual laminates, like the proper logos and all that sort of stuff?
Well, a lot of times they can save the logos from the glass.
Really?
Yeah. Oh. There's a way to like soak it in something. And what happens when you do a proper pop-off is you can see also where the logos were based on the shading, the sun shading. And yeah, so they absolutely replicate it to 100% original condition. So it's the same color as the original board, the same logos, same everything.
Do they ever shape the foam at all?
No.
Because if the foam is yellowed,
yeah,
you could just like,
well, they do tints. They do tint colors. That's the thing. Back then there wasn't airbrushes. It was all tints. So you can do a tint and just cover up the yellow foam.
Right. Interesting. That's very skilled work, man.
Another history lesson for you. Courtesy of this time, my friend Matt Warshaw and the Encyclopedia of Surfing. Lightning Bolt. Surfboard and surf accessories company founded in Honolulu, Hawaii in 1970, David, by Jerry Lopez and Jack Shipley. Interesting note. Jack Shipley's son was a judge on the WCT for a long time. He might still be. Yeah,
Dave Shipley?
Yeah. I cut him off one time. He had words with me. It was not pretty.
Meaning you burned him on a wave?
Yeah.
I apologize. Found yourself in that situation.
No, I apologize. I'm apologizing. It wasn't like there was malice. It was just he went and I wasn't sure if he was going to make it and I went. It was one of those situations, but he didn't take lightly to it and had some words with me. And
was it in Hawaii?
No, it was at Tavarua Collaborate. Anyway, Dave, sorry about that. Anyway, Jerry Lopez and Jack Shipley founded in Lightning Bolt in 1970, and they turned it into an industry powerhouse with the help of California surfwear executive Duke Boyd. Lopez and Shipley were both working at a Honolulu shop called Surfline Hawaii, our friend Dick Metz, in early 1970. The 21-year-old Lopez was on the cusp of becoming a universally acknowledged master at Pipeline and had been shaping surfboards since 1968. Shipley was an ace Surfline Hawaii salesman and a surf competition judge. They joined up and bought the old Hobie Surfboards outlet on nearby Kapi'olani Boulevard in the summer of 1970. Lopez had been using a colored Lightning Bolt emblem on his board since 1969, and since the dark-haired Goofy Footer was going to be the new company's one and only marketing tool, they named the new shop Lightning Bolt Surfboards. Of note, Hanson Surfboards in California had introduced a short-lived Lopez-designed Lightning Bolt model in the early 1970s, or in early 1970. Lightning Bolt quickly became a kind of showroom co-op for many of the best Hawaiian shapers, including Bill Barnfield, Tom Parrish, Reno Abalera, Barry Kanaipuni, Tom Nellis, and Tom Eberle, among many others, all of whom worked out of their own houses. Bolt had no factory of its own, and brought their finished boards to the Bolt retail store, each one trimmed with a distinctive Lightning Bolt logo on the deck. A second Bolt outlet opened on Maui in 1972. Shipley also began distributing free Lightning Bolt surfboards to nearly all of the top surfers who visited the North Shore each winter to compete in the pro contests, which meant the Bolt logo was endlessly featured on magazine covers and in surf movies. The overwhelming majority of the world's best surfers rode Bolt surfboards from 1973 to 1978 while in Hawaii, including world champions Mark Richards, Wayne Bartholomew, Sean Thompson, and Margot Oberg, and ace North Shore riders like Jeff Hackman and Rory Russell. Bolt boards surfboard sales never went above 2,500 boards a year, mainly in Hawaii, but no label before or since has dominated the surf media the way Bolt did in the mid-70s. By 1975, the Bolt logo had been copied by so many board makers around the world that the company took out a full-page ad in Surfer Magazine asking the manufacturers, create your own labels, don't use ours. Bolt boards were even used to political ends during the tension-filled North Shore winter of 76-77, when Hawaiian surfers, upset at the way visiting Australians had crowded and crowed after winning the big competitions the previous years, they demanded that Bolt no longer distribute free boards to those visiting pros. Former Hang Ten surfwear magnate Duke Boyd had by that time come in as the controlling partner of what was now called the Lightning Bolt Corporation. And the company branched out into surfwear, surf wax, leashes, backpacks, wallets, skateboards, bodyboards, towels, and even jewelry. We came out with some really shitty stuff, Jerry Lopez stated later. Friction between company heads caused Lopez to sell his share of Bolt in 1980. So lightning strikes, California Gold surf auction.
What's the current status? Because I was in Portugal 2 weeks ago, and they have a Lightning Bolt shop in Aracera.
Yeah, Portugal owns the Lightning Bolt trademark.
Okay.
Yeah, and they're I think they're doing pretty good. No, I don't think here in the USA there was. I know that one of the Jonathan Paskowitz, I think, was helping to either distribute or own the license here in the USA, and I think it's since faded away. So there is a strong presence in Portugal. Any current stuff, I think, that you see current Lightning Bolt gear or clothes comes from that European division. They're basically the owners of the Lightning Bolt trademark and copyright and all of that stuff. And so I think it's probably pretty big over there. But these are vintage bolts from back in the day.
Yeah, of course. I mean, I didn't even go into the shop.
What do you think about going into the shop? And do you think Lightning Bolt is just like your grandfather's clothes? Like you wouldn't wear it because it's just
Be honest, they haven't.
What is your brand? What do you wear? Like Neat Essentials, right? You and I, we're Neat Essentials. But don't you wear like...
I wish Neat Essentials made me t-shirts.
Don't you wear like yoga t-shirts. Stuff like Viori or... How do you pronounce that? Yoga?
I don't even know what you're talking about.
There's some Viori? Yoga company called like Viori or... I don't know, V-O-U-R-I. I can't even pronounce it.
V-O-U-R-I. I don't know what it is.
It's like a surf skate... Like, or no, it's like a surf yoga lifestyle company. It's big down in where I live in Encinitas.
Is it really? Yeah. Is that the one that Richie Wolcott started?
No, that's Volcom.
No, he has a yoga clothing now.
Oh, does he?
Yeah.
Oh, maybe. I don't think he's involved in this. This is more like a pro skater, I think, is involved in it. Anyway.
Well...
What is your brand is my question. Would you wear Lightning Bolt clothing?
I wouldn't be against it. I try to wear clothing with no logos.
Why? I mean, it's like...
I don't like
Do you care that much or is it just like it just so happens that most of my clothes don't have...
I care logos. To not make a statement is what it is. Like I prefer just anonymity in my clothing.
Secret society.
Exactly. Yeah. So
it's hard to be secret with that chop up hairdo though. People are like, well, that must be David Lee Scales.
Exactly. I want to be noticed for the important things, not for the brand of clothing that I'm wearing. So the answer, would I buy Lightning Bolt? The answer, I don't think that they've done a great job of conveying to me who they are at this point. Like I only think of them as Jerry Lopez from the 70s.
Yeah.
And I was shocked to even see a modern store.
Yeah.
And so if they were like, for example, Tommy Bahama does a phenomenal job of being Tommy Bahama. I know exactly what the brand identity is.
Yeah.
That's not something I wear, by the way, for the record,
right.
But it is like very much what it is. And I'm, as a consumer, crystal clear about what that style of clothing is. And because they've been clear about that, I know I never need to go into that store.
Right.
But there's tons of people who want it. Lightning Bolt, on the other hand, I'm kind of confused about it. And I would almost...
stick out. It's just lost in the...
I almost felt like it was cheesy. Like when I saw the store, I was like, oh, you're banking on the... Like what you guys did well was make surfboards. So what are you selling in there? And is it built to the same spec as the surfboards? I'm not sure. It just feels like branded merch.
Yeah.
You know, like at a certain point, Body Glove started just licensing out Body Glove to make blow up pool stuff and beer koozies or cozies or whatever they're called. And I see Body Glove everything.
Yeah, there's like Body Glove microphones.
Totally.
Body Glove phones.
Yeah. And it's like they still make high quality wetsuits.
Do they?
Yeah, for sure they do. I mean, I don't wear them, but I know that they do. I know they're still in that game, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, point is, Lightning Bolt, would I wear the clothes? I guess. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't even know what their clothes look like. I was surprised to see the store. By the way, speaking of Portugal.
Yeah, tell us.
I owe a big shout out. Magic
Quiver. Is this where the quid pro quo comes in?
No, there was no quid pro quo. Yeah. There wasn't because of a miscommunication between Donald Brink and I. Because Donald,
but there was going to be quid pro quo.
I wish I had known in advance.
All we need is the intent to impeach.
Yeah. Magic Quiver is the brand name, and they've had Donnie Brink come out and do like a residency, and they've had your buddy Gary McNeil come out and make a bunch of boards. Travis Reynolds has been out. I forget who else, but this guy Mario, super savvy, He's been there in Portugal for like 7 years. He's from Germany originally, but really interesting in that he's based in Ericeira and has kind of developed multiple businesses, retail surf shop, but doesn't own like a surfboard factory, but he has these guys come out and do residencies and puts them up, over at Cementi Surfboards, who is like a great, great surfboard manufacturer there. So uses Cementi shaping room, farms out the glassing, and makes high quality surfboards from these international shapers, which draws a crowd, of course, to come. And, but Ericeira is this little village. You couldn't get a lot of space if you tried. So he has multiple businesses around town, like the retail shop, but then like a little cafe that does really great health conscious food. Then he has like a surf lodge that he developed. And then he has a restaurant that he's developed. And the restaurant is phenomenal. We had dinner there. I did not stay at the surf lodge, to answer your quid pro quo question. The invite got extended. It got lost in the mail. We booked a room elsewhere, and I would have loved to have stayed at a surf lodge. But everything that he's doing is really, really rad. And they loaned me a surfboard and wetsuit and all that sort of stuff while I was there, so I was able to surf.
How good are the waves? How good is Portugal? I love that place.
It's the best, dude. So it happened to be during the QS event that I was there. So
didn't you get Hurricane Lorenzo?
Is that what that was?
Or wasn't that the Lorenzo swell that came up and did went extra tropical and came back down to Europe?
Yeah.
It was pumping.
It was pumping for that QS event.
She went to Morocco.
Well, dude,
okay, you went to Portugal.
Yeah.
How is Portugal?
Amazing. Amazing.
I love that place.
It really is kind of the best. I'm a fan. I have an affinity for France for reasons that we discussed. I love Italy, you know, but Portugal, it's more rustic. The people are just everything. Rustic is kind of the right way to describe it because it's cheaper. The food is like hearty. There's no pretense. What they do good is stew, you know, but it's like delicious. It's fantastic stew.
Stew is such an interesting concept because really what is stew? Stew is like, we don't have shit.
What isn't it?
We don't have shit. Let's put it all in this pot.
And it's like, so you go, I was then in Italy for a week. My brother is stationed there in the army. So that was the whole purpose of this trip, was to spend time with my brother. But you go into Italy and it's all very refined. Yeah. Like it's as ancient, but it's refined, you know, and like the buildings, like the architecture is, you know, and the art scene and the food and the people even are dressed to the nines. And and that's all great. And it's great just to kind of, but it's not as relatable. It's like if you weren't born into it. You couldn't
get away with this.
You couldn't get away with shoeless. Definitely not. No. You couldn't get away with tennis shoes even.
Really?
I mean, you're identifiable as an American if you wear your tennis shoes. I envision you in Skechers. Am I right?
Yeah, like without the shoelaces, the kind that you just twist on and twist off. Velcro Skechers. That's pretty American.
Are they Skechers or aren't they, Scott? That's right. Are they Skechers?
I don't have Skechers, but I would wear them.
Okay. Then I'm wrong. I stand corrected.
No, I don't have Skechers. Not against Skechers, though.
But so then in Portugal, it's more relatable. It's like this is normal people that are working regular jobs, getting by, like, you know, and there's so much undeveloped coastline is what it is. And a lot of it is surfable. Almost all of it is surfable.
And it's been described as the way California was in like the 1930s.
Yeah, for sure. I could see that. Yeah. It looks like California.
Yeah.
We did a night one night in Nazaré, which was really, really cool. It wasn't pumping, but like Praia Norte, the beach around the point, there's great waves there no matter, like almost all the time.
Yeah.
Right, the little town.
You mean north of the point or south of the
north of the point?
Okay, so where they do the sleds in and out, the skis up. Like basically Nazaré, the wave, but but when it's small, it's just like this pumping beach break.
So Nazaré, if you're looking at it on video. The town. No, the wave itself. If you're watching the wave break on any of the videos you've seen, the left goes into like a bay, which there is great beach break sandbars up and down that beach. That's, it's called Praia Norte.
Right,
But the town itself is on the south end of the point, and it's a beautiful little beach town.
I bet.
It's awesome. Fishing village.
Does it have like a center where there's a church?
Of course.
Yeah.
As all European towns do. There's multiple churches, but yes, there is one church at the center of the town. And it's, you know, a lot of pedestrian cobbled streets, great restaurants, great seafood, all that sort of stuff. Great little beach. Go body surf the shore break and stuff.
Have you ever thought about doing that walk that walk that I think they called the Way or something like that. Do you know what I mean? Like,
oh.
There's that classic walk where you like, it links up a bunch of historic.
I saw the Emilio Estevez movie.
Yeah, that's the walk.
Yeah.
I forget what it's called. I think it's called the Way.
I forget what it's called too.
It's called like the Walk of Santa Domingo or something like that.
Pretty good at accessing your memory right now. Oh, that was, I
you
know cannot. What?
It's because I've been meditating.
Good for you. Yeah. I forgot about that walk. I don't know where it starts or where it ends, but now
I think it ends in Portugal, which is why I brought it up.
I would totally do that walk.
Yeah.
Did you ever see, speaking of movies about walking, did you ever see
Caddyshack?
Wild, the Reese Witherspoon movie?
No.
It's so good, dude.
I think you told me to see it. I want to see
it. Oh, really? I read the book too. Cheryl Strayed is the author, and then they made a book or a movie about it, which is equally as good. I mean, there's not a lot of times where you can kind of fit in all of the story into a movie.
Yeah.
But the movie's so good. Oh. But it's about tale as old as time. Girl hits rock bottom and then sets out to find herself on the trail for the Pacific, the PCT.
Oh, really? The Pacific Coast Trail.
Is that what it is?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it starts in California. She does it from California. Like,
it basically cruises along the Rockies, right?
Yeah.
Or the Sierra Nevadas.
Yeah. She does it to Oregon and finds herself along the way.
Cool.
Sort of a thing, you know?
That is a gnarly trail. That must take, that takes like a year or more. Like that.
It depends how much of it you do. She did 3 months, I think.
Huh.
Yeah. But it was really good.
Anyway, how did we get down this rabbit hole?
Because I was in Portugal.
Oh, that's right.
Anyway, shout out to Magic Quiver and Mario for the loners. And we had a wonderful dinner that night. Donald Brink was there.
Did you get some good waves?
It was okay. Fun. It was okay. That right point straight out in front of the town. I don't even know what they call it. Super fun, but wonky. You know, it's like you're standing there going, oh my God, there's a right point. It looks so good. And then you get out there and it's like high tide and wonky and kind of washy.
It breaks and it backs off.
And you're like constantly trying to like cut back into the, but then a section runs. And I was on the wrong board too. But it was still, you're in the water and it's super, no, it's super killer, fun. Yeah. I got a couple. It was fun.
Yeah.
But had a great meal too. That's the other thing is you just cannot eat poorly. Like the bread's better, you know, like just simple things are just better.
And you go into these, like you open up, I remember in Portugal, like when you go into these buildings, they're like 1400 years older. They're like, and so these doors, like the construction is so old, and then you get inside and it's kind of dark. It's kind of like dark. It's darkly lit, right? Obviously. Yeah. And the tables, everything's super old is what I remember. Yeah. Like there's nothing
even their
contemporary.
New?
It's all just the doors, the windows, the tables, the chairs. Like sometimes it's the floor's been around forever.
It's even their newer buildings are older than our country is.
Yeah.
I mean, no joke.
Yeah.
What's embarrassing or puts things in
they need an IKEA over there.
Yeah, fast furniture, disposable furniture.
Oh, that's what they need.
It puts things into perspective, and like if we have something that is as old, like you go to Boston or wherever it is, there's a rope around it. You can't get within 20 feet, and they charge you $30 to get within 30 feet of it, you know, like it's silly. And then there you're walking into these buildings that are from, you know, 800 years old.
Lisboa.
Yeah. We had dinner in a church in Verona in Italy, not dinner, pizza for lunch. It was like this pizza place in a church, a former church, but all the frescoes are still on the wall. You know, like they haven't remodeled it for the restaurant. They'd put tables in it. And a pizza oven.
Why remodel it? It's a freaking old church. Sounds cool.
It was so rad. Every other restaurant, it's like you want to dine al fresco on the street, but there it's like, no, we want to go inside and be in the church. Mm. Great pizza too.
Well, that's important.
Drank communion wine.
Wow. Yeah. Sounds like you could write a song.
Yeah.
I saw Steely Dan, which is insanely good.
Really?
So good. Oh, I love Steely Dan.
Is it like the original band members?
Well, Walter Becker, the guitarist, is dead.
So but he's not playing anymore?
No, he's dead.
Oh.
Did I say that? Yeah.
Okay.
He doesn't play anymore.
Oh, okay. Got it.
But Donald Fagen and a lot of the guys trombone, the brass section, a lot of those guys that are still kind of been with them for a long time, touring. It was really good.
Are they still making music or is it just they just play the hits?
I I think that they have put out probably an album within the last 5 years, but it's basically the hits.
We should call Chris Cote right now.
Dude, I was wondering if he was going to be there. But it was so freaking good, man. I'm telling you.
Really?
I've been on a Steely Dan binge lately.
Let's end the show with Steely Dan today. Give me a track that we should...
Kid Charlemagne.
Done.
Such a good song.
Sing it for us.
Do you know what that song's about? You know, Kid Charlemagne, doot.
I don't know what it's about.
It's an interesting... So Kid Charlemagne was, according to lore, was the Grateful Dead's LSD connection. That was Kid Charlemagne. And that song's about him getting busted. Is there gas in the car? Yes, there's gas in the car. He runs out of gas. Cops pull up behind him and find all his LSD.
Hmm.
Kid Charlemagne.
If you're on LSD, you don't need gas.
Exactly.
I'm going intergalactic.
No doubt. And I saw Peter Frampton.
Wow.
Which was really good.
Yeah, you're on a roll.
Dude. And guess who opened for Peter Frampton?
Hmm.
Jason Bonham's Led Zeppelin Experience. Which was mental.
So I got a podcast recommendation from a listener for this podcast called Disgraceland. And I listened this morning to the Led Zeppelin episode. So that's weird that you say that. But Disgraceland, it's all about the seedy underbelly of music groups. And that one focused on their devil worshiping, basically. Like their obsession with the occult. Don't even roll your eyes.
It was Jimmy Page.
Yeah.
Right. And there was that one author. What was his name?
Aleister Crowley.
Yeah, Aleister Crowley. And they literally bought Aleister Crowley's mansion.
Yep.
And they made a bunch of their albums there.
Yep.
They made probably the best one, which was the double album, Physical Graffiti, I think they made there.
They get deep into all of it and tell like actual stories of seances that they did and all that sort of stuff. And like bringing in Bowie, like Bowie was really interested in it. And then he went to one of the seances and
was like,
got his mind blown. Yeah. No, he got tripped out by it.
Yeah.
And then like didn't want anything to do with it from that point on. So like he distanced himself from Jimmy Page, but they would like run into each other occasionally. And Bowie would like not make eye contact, look the other way, because he was worried like he was going to get infected by the spirit, you know? But
by the way, Jimmy Page dispels all of this stuff, just for the record. Like there's stuff where Jimmy Page is like, no, I mean, I was fascinated for a couple of years with Aleister Crowley and some of the dark metaphysical stuff for sure.
Yeah.
But it's not like he was, they just brought in some of that mysticism into some of their music and stuff. Cause at the time he was interested in it, but it's not like he was, dude, he was boning chicks and snorting coke. Come on.
So he was specifically boning a 15-year-old.
Yeah, exactly. From California.
And she had previously lost her virginity a year prior when she was 14 to Bowie. So Bowie was her original. And then she's with Jimmy Page. What's her? Laura Maddox, I think that's her name, right? So they get into all those stories as well. Like handcuffing groupies to the bed, leaving him there overnight, like parents. That girl Laura Maddox's mom signed off on her dating Jimmy Page.
Was she was a model, right? Wasn't she like the really kind of semi-famous model?
I think she was famous because of being with
Jimmy
Page.
Saw her in a magazine
at 15.
She
was a child model.
And she's like, he's like, go get her.
Crazy, dude.
Have you read that book I'm with the Band by Pamela DeBars?
No.
Well, it's basically about groupies. She was like the original groupie, Pamela DeBars. Her husband, Michael DeBars, he still has like a radio show on Sirius XM or whatever. Anyway, that might tie into this if you're...
Okay.
It's kind of a fun, lightheaded look at what it was like to be a chick in Southern California in 1971.
Wild times, dude.
Laguna, the canyon there.
Oh, by the way, you were asking about Echo in the Canyon.
I know.
They're adding it to Netflix this month.
Okay.
So don't go spend the $5.
I almost did spend the $5.
No, just wait. It's mid-month, I feel like. October 16th or so, it'll be on Netflix. Hmm. Anyway, Disgraceland podcast for anybody who's interested. It's really good. But also they'll do like NWA, like the rap group, and like their actual gang affiliations and like shootings and drug dealing and all this stuff. They get pretty deep and raw with all. It's really well done. Thanks to the podcast, our podcast listener who recommended that. My Duke Scott is Julian Wilson for his endless campaign. He does it every year for breast cancer awareness for October. His mother survived breast cancer, and so Jules goes all pink on his quiver and on his wetsuits and boardies and all that sort of stuff. And even had other surfers rocking pink sunglasses and all that sort of stuff just to raise awareness for breast cancer.
Who was it that was... Was it called Griffin? Did you see what Griffin did, by the way?
He's my kook. Oh, okay. So we'll roll straight into that. Okay. Jules, Duke, Griffin, kook.
Okay.
You wanted to say why? Or
well, something? I saw that he was in an interview, a post-heat interview. He had just won a heat, and Rosie was talking to him, and he was like basically just being straight up honest. And he's like, you know what? I had to take a poop. I just drank some coffee. So I paddled out the back, tore off my jersey, my competition jersey, pulled down my full suit, and dropped the kids off at the pool, and then, you know, did my business, you know. Like, so he said all this, and poor Rosie's like, doesn't know how to handle it. Actually, she did a great job of handling it.
She did, yeah.
And
she's like, all right, you want to be light for your heat,
you know. Got to lighten the load. So he lightened his load out in the water in France, just like brown trout.
Yeah.
A lot of brown trout swimming around there.
Aqua dump.
Have you ever done that?
No.
What? Me either.
When was the last time? Go ahead. Was it in Mexico? Like, were you on a trip somewhere?
No. I can't speak of this. Listen to Disgraceland. I will divulge it all in Disgraceland.
Dude, you whipped out big time.
I did.
So here's the reason why he's my kook. Okay. He's not a kook for doing it.
Right.
I love that he, I mean, I kind of love that he talked about it.
Okay. You love that he talked about it.
Yeah. I don't love that he did it. I love that he talked about it. He's a kook for, dude, that's the worst way to, like, if you got to take a dump and your heat's going to start, it takes less time, I'd argue, to go into the beach and go than it does to peel off a 3-2 full suit in the ocean. How do you even put it back on? Have you ever tried to put a wetsuit on?
Yeah, numerous times.
It's impossible. I just said that. Oh, I thought you'd be wearing trunks when you did it.
You know, different times. Different.
The whole thing is so impractical to me.
Yeah.
Like, I was offended by the impracticality of it more than I was the taking a dump in the lineup that you're going to be surfing in with all your buddies.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So that was the problem is
you're putting... I've dumped in my full suit before.
Oh my God, yeah. Scott, this is getting worse.
Yeah, well, I'm just saying. I had like...
How does that even flush out?
You know,
suit away?
Then you disrobe and rinse it out.
So was it accidental?
Yes. It was a shart.
Are you lying to me?
It was a shart. No. I wouldn't do it on purpose. Look, I don't wear shoes, but I'm not that dirty.
So you sharted in your full suit and hat, and then... Tell me.
And it was just an explosion.
Were you sick?
Yeah, there was some, obviously there was some, something going on in my stomach.
Okay.
Yeah.
Carry on.
Full explosion.
Okay.
Oh my God, I can't believe I just did that. You know, running through my veins. Are people looking? Oh my God, does this stink? And so you just got to paddle down the beach somewhere and as quickly as possible, pull your suit off in the water.
Poo paddle.
Just like the stuff oozing. Just surrounding your hair and just like, yeah, exactly. Yeah, just chunks of like carrots.
Oh my God.
Corn.
Oh my God, I'm going to barf right now.
And then this you just suit back up, dude. And go win the heat.
Horrifying. Dude, I would burn the wetsuit. I'm not into littering. I would still leave that in the ocean. Wetsuit. No, God. This is a perfect time. Shout out to Neat Essentials. When you... poo in your wetsuit and you need to replace it.
Okay, NeedEssentials.com. This is truly an essential.
This is an essential.
Yeah.
That is horrifying.
You know what? It is kind of horrifying.
I don't know that we can record or hang out anymore.
That's like, fine. Do we even hang out ever?
No.
This you need to come down and visit.
There was always a stench that I couldn't quite put my nose on. And now you know. I know.
I need those ball wipes from Manscaped. What are they called?
Crop Reviver. I think, yeah. Well, dude, that's horrifying. So anyways, Griff, he is the kook.
Am I now the kook? I'm going to let the internet... Griffin.
I need the internet to really take the reins on this one and do what they will with either artwork or something.
No, look, I'm not proud of it, but I'm just being honest. You know, I would hope that the internet wouldn't take me to task too hard for my honesty or I will never be honest again.
Wow, threatening the internet. That'll get you far. That'll get you far.
Oh,
well, Griff,
I've been surfing for 37 years.
There's going to be a few dumps and a few wetsuits.
A few times, maybe once.
So Griff, again, the illogical, like, just go in and then handle your business and go back out. That would make a lot more sense to me than trying to put on a soaking wet full
suit. So it's a procedural reason that he's a kook. It's procedural. It's not, it's like, dude, just do it the right way.
It would take less time.
Right.
To go in, drop a deuce, run back out. No big deal.
Yeah.
Chloe and Dino talked about that on air a while back. Him doing the exact same thing.
You're dumbfounded.
No. I've got another thought on this is there's been these moments I've noticed in this event specifically. That moment and then also William Cardoso losing to Wade Carmichael and flipping the F out. Yeah. Like full breakdown. And the commentators never even commented on it.
That's
so you and I have been advocating for personalities. Like we need, these guys are making too much money. They're all gone too bland. It's not interesting. It's all going vanilla. And the WSL is really kind of encouraging the vanilla-ness. We need characters. We're starting to see characters break out. We have Griffin Colapinto talking about taking a dump. We've got William Cardoso going into a fit of rage over losing. And the camera shies away and the commentators don't run with it. No, the commentators need to focus on it and replay the board punch and discuss it and be like, this guy's lost his mind. You know why? It's because he doesn't have a mainstream sponsor and he's struggling to get to events or whatever.
And what number is he on the CT relative to the QS requalifying, all that? That's really coming into play right now.
And he's stressed out about the finances and he's stressed out about, you know, whatever it is. Like those are the things they need to be leaning into. And I don't know that the WSL is having even an opinion or telling them what to talk about or not. Maybe it's just the commentators. Maybe the commentators need to just be more
like you and I.
Well, how do they not talk about it? This is happening in front of you. How are you not talking about
exactly.
it? Like it's weird.
Yeah, we need John McEnroe to step up and go, look, this is happening. Let's discuss this.
At the bare minimum, commentators,
emotion.
You need to represent what the viewers are experiencing.
Bare minimum.
We're seeing this happen and you're not putting our thoughts into words, which is your purpose.
You're blowing it.
Blowing it. Blowing it.
By the way, my buddy Jake Marshall
is number your buddy.
Five on the QS, and it looks like he's going to qualify. I think he's five.
Name drop.
He's not really my buddy, but I do yoga with his dad. But he's my son's buddy, kind of. They surf together. I don't know, but my son and I are. I guess what I'm saying is, my son and I are fanboys of Jake Marshall, and we want to see him qualify for the tour.
So I would.
I think he might qualify.
I would love to see it. I'm going to put the heat on him right now, though.
Okay.
Where did he go for the last 5 years? He was America's great hope 5 years ago, and he disappeared. What happened?
You know what? He's been building, getting his feet under him, like kind of like building the house, you know, getting the foundation going, learning the ropes of all of this stuff. And like now it's like time.
What happened? What's the backstory?
I don't know.
Did he have a misstep?
Well, he was injured.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he's been injured.
And now more heat. What makes him better than Griff Colapinto or anybody else? Like, because I sounds honestly, like
what I would say to you when you're being fanboy for like Michael Rodriguez or whoever.
It's Matt Banning, by the way.
The same difference.
That's my point. Is how is he different than Matt Banning?
I don't know. I'm just a fanboy because he's a guy from Encinitas and he's like everyone knows him around town. Yeah. So it's like that's why I'm stoked. You know, he's a local guy.
I saw footage of him recently, and I'm like, oh, he's bulked out a little bit, and he looks stronger. His turns are bigger. But where's the point of difference?
Yeah. Well, we need to see. Maybe there isn't one.
Yeah.
It could be that he just falls by the wayside like many of them do. I hope not. His brother, I think his name's Nick, is really good too. But
there's three of them, I think, right?
Yeah. And the point is that like this is basically what you and I have always said. Like, there's a million great surfers. The difference is what's between your ears.
Hmm.
You know, do you got what it takes?
Are you going to dump in your wetsuit?
Yeah, or not.
Or not. Yeah. Are you going to go into the beach like a civilized human being?
Or are you going to do what it takes to win, like Griffin and Scott?
And just blow that thing out.
We better like get
no, move no. on here. I've got a must-see moment real quick.
Oh, good.
Chris Cote's 21-hour series with Red Bull. Did you see this?
I have not seen
it. It's funny, dude.
Is it?
It's funny. So Red Bull does their 21 days series, which is very, very good, as most of Red Bull Media House's stuff is. And Chris Cote just dropped an episode called 21 Hours instead of 21 Days, where he's going to like hang with Ian Crane for the 21 hours of the airborne thing, in preparation for the airborne thing is what it was actually. But it's all satirical, and it's all, it was like, I saw it on Instagram. Chris advertised it in a 1 minute clip on Instagram. And I thought it was just a 1 minute spoof. And I thought that's hilarious. And it was really well done. And I was surprised Red Bull like let him use their branding on it.
Yeah.
Well, turns out, no, it's actually a Red Bull thing. That's like an 8 minute long,
content.
Yeah. And so I watched the 8 minute long one, thinking at every moment that it was going to go, bland, or the joke was going to fall flat. And it wasn't. Like, 8 minutes was good. It was really funny, well executed 8 minute satire.
All right.
Following Ian Crane for 21 hours in San Clemente as he's training. It's almost like a spoof on these guys don't actually train, you know, like we're going to follow his in the 21 day series where Julian Wilson and like Adriana DeSouza are hitting the gym and going all serious. This is like
Ian Crane's playing Call of Duty.
Yeah, exactly. He's like waking up at 9 a.m. missed the window of good waves and
checking in with Clay Marzo, yeah, seeing what's up.
Making sure they land their morning dump in a toilet, not in their wetsuit later.
I have quite a few boards coming through that I'm pretty psyched on. I've got a Mitsvin single fin, six channel wing pin, kind of like 78 era bladey single fin. Not bladey, it'll be full, but at the tail will be nice and thinned out.
Wow.
Six channels with side bites.
Okay.
And I just picked up a Stuck Henson longboard, kind of like a more of a tucked performance edge in the tail, but softer up in the nose. So it's just a nose rider, but a sing, you know, like a not a 50-50 rail, hard to turn board. And I've got a new Wayne Rich coming, a longboard, a two stringers, 4 inches apart down the middle, tapering to thicker stringers in the tail, thinner up by the nose, so the nose will kind of bend a little when I get up there. Yeah.
Wow. Why do you have so many new surfboards?
I don't know. God, who knows? I wish so many. It's silly. How many?
It's obscene.
No, it is. It's
really obscene.
The Mitsvin one, I saw one online. I'm like, God, I love that board. That reminds me of what I rode when I was a kid. So I ordered that. Then with Wayne, we're just hanging out. I just did a podcast with him. And he's like, when am I making your board? I'm like, I don't know. Let's do longboard. He's like, you know, just kind of like happened. And yeah.
I'm offended by your grotesque, gluttonous American consumption of surfboards.
Yes, exactly. Me too. You and me both.
Yeah. I'm offended. Like, I mean, I'm saying that jokingly, but it comes from a place of seriousness. Well, like you go to Portugal.
I'll have the soup.
I almost forgot. By the way, I will too.
Touché. But well played, David.
She's out of my age group. Like, I've got a bit of a range, but that's outside of my age group. The dating apps make you set a range, Scott, and so
I wouldn't know. Yeah, happily married.
Good. And so what were we talking about? Oh yeah, so I was in Portugal, right? And it's like you see how far a dollar goes.
Yeah.
And then you you want to curtail your expenses, you know, like whatever. I can't even think of what it is that I would spend money on in Portugal. But then I realized, like, put that into perspective at home. I'll drop $50 at home, like without thinking about it, on something stupid. Maybe I'm talking about dating. It'll be on a date easily, $50 for some girl I'm never going to see again, you know?
Not going so well. Huh? No, maybe exactly. You need to spread the date range a little.
So I'm just like frivolous about these expenditures at home because it's expensive to live in Southern California and you develop this threshold for expense that is unrealistic anywhere else in the world. That's, you know, So then you go travel somewhere where a dollar goes a lot, lot farther and you're like, oh, I should really at home spend less money. I have a spare bedroom full of junk that I never am going to see. Like, I need to just purge and live a leaner lifestyle. But then I come in here and sit across from you and I feel like I'm living a lean lifestyle because I only have 12 surfboards and you have 80.
There's a reason I have no shoes.
Oh, okay.
It's because I have a lot of boards.
You're funneling that budget, your Skechers budget, into longboards from Kenson.
I've been wearing my what are those? Cobian sandals. That's what I wear.
Oh, really?
Yeah. By the way, do we need to do a shout out to any of our other sponsors?
Well, Neat Essentials, of course, spyoptic.com just gave away a Rossin last month to a winner named Matt Brown.
Cool.
How cool is that? So,
is that a spit thing or is that just a Surf Splendor
thing? It's for the whole everybody network. Who listens to any of our podcasts gets in on it. But so
Spy just got purchased.
I know. And it was a good move.
Okay.
It's a good move.
Good.
It's going to be good for everybody. Anyway, yes. And I was going to say, my rainbows are about to expire, my black ones that I'm wearing right now. And Neat Essentials has leather sandals
really?
That I'm going to replace them with. Yeah.
Oh, I think I need to do that too.
Yeah. They've got a few accessories nowadays. But yeah, I saw the sandals. I think it was at the Boardroom show. They had a few on display. It was like a new product offering. And
they just sent me some
standard black leather sandals, which is what I need.
Yeah.
Again, give me no logos. Let's keep it discreet.
Yeah.
But
you've got a so real perfect. Johnny Cash thing. You're always in black. Everything's real black.
I'm glad you noticed this. Yeah. That was what I was going for. Yeah. Johnny Cash.
Yeah. By the way, I heard the Ken Burns thing on country music on KPBS, the documentary. I haven't seen it, but I heard it's really good.
Okay.
I'm going to check that out.
I feel mixed about Ken Burns.
Yeah.
It's like, if I commit to it, I'm always thrilled that I did. But it's such a daunting task and it's like so boring. Like none of it is sexy. So you kind of have to commit and then you realize the depth of it, you know, pays dividends. Mm-hmm. But
Did you watch the Vietnam War one?
No. No, should I?
I mean, it's you kind of nailed it. That's why I asked you because it's daunting and in-depth and historic and meaningful. And when you're done with it, you've learned a lot, but it's not like Platoon.
you feel like you have to do it. It's like a homework assignment.
Kind of. But it's a little better than that. Plus, I'm a history geek, so I love it.
Yeah. That one, though, the new one is it like 6 hours or?
I heard it's pretty long. Yeah. I haven't seen it. I heard I need to see it.
Yeah.
Because of the way that Ken Burns deals with country music and racism in America. Because there's an interesting thing there, you know, like, you know, the South, country music, Waylon Jennings, Willie Nelson, Johnny Cash. A lot of those guys are pretty liberal, pretty progressive in their thinking, but we tend to think of, you know, super alt-right country music by Charlie Daniels or whoever, you know?
Yeah.
But like the Allman Brothers, although they're not necessarily
You're always going to cycle them back into the conversation no matter what we're talking about.
Well, I mean, they had Jammo, black drummer, you know, like, so I think obviously musicians are generally more progressive and liberal in their thought process than most. But, you know, then there's some pretty gnarly racist singers, you know, like, I don't know, David Allan Coe or some, there's some guys that are just gnarly.
Yeah.
But anyway, check it out. I haven't checked it out, but I'm looking forward to seeing it.
Cool. All right. Well, Scott, it's always a pleasure. Spitpodcast.com is the website. Shout out and thank you to Surfing Heritage and Culture Center for hosting us yet again.
Yes.
If you want to see what this place looks like, I'll post a video of Scott entering the building with no shoes. I filmed it on my
oh my god
on my phone. So I'll post
until next time. Adios and aloha. While the music played, you walked by candlelight. Stopped to stare at your technical motor. Every apron had your number on the wall. You must have had it all. You go to LA on a dare and you go it alone. Could you live forever? Could you see the day? Could you feel your whole world fall apart and fade away? Get it long. Get it long, get Charlemagne. Get it long, get Charlemagne.
Gas in the car. Yes, there's gas in the car.